Very good. Me again. Ooh, here we go. So welcome to another talk about meditation again, because this is a meditation retreat, and instead of telling you all the theory, what's going to happen, it's much better to give you instructions on how to do these things. In other words, the tricks on how to learn meditation. How yesterday I was talking about how to improve the mindfulness and how the stillness is really important. When your mind becomes still, the energy goes into the knower instead of the doer. You literally wake up, which means that your mindfulness can see more of what's happening, which means you can see the mistakes which you make in meditation, why you actually stop yourself going into very deep and wonderful states of meditation. You can see the faults. But without that awareness, sometimes it's so difficult. Sometimes you meditate and you don't know what's happening, or you don't know what's going wrong. And because of that, meditation becomes difficult. So for the first few days of a retreat, I always like to get people to relax and not do too much. And you think you may be being lazy, but what is actually happening? You're giving the opportunity for mindfulness to increase. But at this stage of the retreat, in order to get that mindfulness even stronger, you encourage everybody not to talk too much. In other words, to see if you can start to be in a little bubble by yourself. So if you want to go for a walk, go for a walk by yourself. If you want to go to visit Bodhinyana Monastery, go by yourself. Because when you're by yourself and you don't talk so much, it doesn't stir up your mind so much. Which means you can become more relaxed, more tranquil, more peaceful. And when you go to your room, you don't need to talk to everybody. You know each other now. See if you can be quieter with more silence. Because when the mouth moves, so does the mind. There is an old Zen story of two monks having an argument. They saw the flag fluttering on the top of the flagpost. And one of the monks said, "The flag was moving." And the other one said, "No, the wind was moving." And so they went to see the Zen master, who was right. And the Zen master said, "You are both wrong, the mind was moving." And they didn't like that answer, so they went to see the Ajahn, the Theravada monk. And he said, "All three of you were wrong. The problem was not the wind moving, the problem was not the flag moving, the problem wasn't the mind moving, the problem was your mouth was moving." So it's really important to keep the mouth still. And don't talk so much. You don't need to talk so much. Because when you start to develop external silence, you soon wonder just how useless was all this speaking. All these conversations, what have they ever done? They just stirred you up even more and stopped you from learning how to be quiet and peaceful and see the Dhamma. So at this stage of the retreat, see if you can be mindful of not talking so much and learn how to come inside. So you're not sending your mind out to your friends and colleagues. You're keeping it inside. So even when you are eating, is the food delicious? Do you enjoy the food here? Well, it's like listening to a concert, or even like listening to Ajahn Brahm as I'm speaking. Do you have a conversation with one another? Of course not, because you're paying attention. So when you're eating, it's like a Dhamma talk from Ajahn Food. they're teaching something. So listen. In other words, eat silently when you have your lunch. And in your room, make a cup of tea silently. And go into your room to see how little you can talk. And the less you talk, again, the more the energy will go into mindfulness rather than thinking. But please don't take it too far. Because sometimes people refuse to say anything. They're keeping strict silence. So when there's a snake, they say, when is the fire? And people get bitten by snakes, they get hurt by the fire. If there's something to say, say it. But don't speak too much. And that way we can develop a little bit more stillness. And when that stillness starts to come up, it becomes very powerful and very enjoyable, which means when you are walking, you can actually feel the sensations in the feet as you're walking. When you're eating, you can taste the food. And when you are out there getting your hair wet, you can feel the water on your face, and it's magic. And when you sit meditating, you can feel your body, you can relax it because the stillness has created more mindfulness. And with the power of that mindfulness, it becomes really easy to meditate. You just watch this incredible things going on in your body as you relax it. And once the body is relaxed, then you can relax your mind. And you see all these thoughts coming and going. And you can just see them like you watch your food. You can just feel them coming in, feel them going out, without getting involved in the thoughts. The problem with people why they get involved and entangled in the thoughts is the same example of why people can be watching a soccer match. I don't know how many Indonesians or Hong Kong people follow soccer in England, the EPL. But I've seen this myself in the airports. People watching a game, and it may be Liverpool playing Manchester United over in England. And this is in Singapore Airport or Hong Kong or in Jakarta Airport. They're watching on the TV and they're shouting at the screen, offside, offside, that was offside, ref, or shoot, pass, pass. They're shouting at the screen in Jakarta. It doesn't matter how loud you shout, they cannot hear it in England. And anyway, it's probably a replay of a match already finished. But why is it that people get so involved they shout at the TV screen? And don't just criticize the guys. You're watching a movie. And the hero, gets killed. It's one of my memories when I was a student. This was a long time ago. One of the movies we took our girlfriends to go and see, a few of my mates and our girlfriends, all went to see this movie called West Side Story, because I remember this. And if you remember that story, it was based on Romeo and Juliet, but set in a poor part of New York, where there was these two opposing gangs, the Italians and the Puerto Ricans. And a guy, he was, I think, Puerto Rican family. And what was he? No, he was the Italian. Anyway, one of the two. He fell in love with a girl from the opposite gang. And so it was a love affair which was doomed from the start. It was like a Cantonese falling in love with a Hokkien. Did I get that right? Yeah, I did. It was doomed. But they gave it everything they got. And, you know, this in a movie, somebody did something wrong and it was misunderstood. It got worse and worse. And in the end, Maria, she was the girl. Tony was the guy. And it was Maria's brother was trying to shoot Tony. And Maria was trying to find Tony. And eventually, she found Tony. He was under a lamppost in the rain in New York. And she shouted out, look out, someone's trying to kill you. And as she shouted that out, there was the sound of a gunshot. She almost warned him in time, but not quite. And Tony had a bullet wound in his chest. And Maria ran to embrace the love of her life while he was dying under the lamppost, a love which was doomed. And this must have been in 1967 or something. Even then, in the poorest part of New York, there was an orchestra. Because they started playing. And they sang as they were dying. There's a place for us. Somewhere a place for us. And all our girlfriends, every one of them, started crying and weeping. And all the guys, being very sensitive, started laughing. It's only a movie. He hasn't really got shot. And if you don't believe me, wait to see another hour get replayed again. They all get reincarnated. But why did you get emotionally involved, you know, in a movie? It's the same process why we get entangled in our thoughts. Just like when you're watching a football match. People actually, they believe, they perceive they're in the stands of the football ground. That's what they think. So they can actually shout and people can actually hear them. That's how we perceive it. That's how we imagine it. Our cognition gets perverted. When you're in the movie, you think you're standing right next to Maria and Tony. That's why it's so sad. Or you shout out, there's someone with a gun, move. I've seen people do that on movies. They shout out, hey, look out behind you. It's as if you're right there inside the movie. And that's precisely why we get caught up in thoughts. When it's a thought or a fantasy, it's like we're right there, experiencing all the emotions, all the excitement, all the pain, everything. We get caught up in it. And the way to overcome being entangled and caught up in your thoughts is to learn how, I say, put some space between you and the thoughts. Imagine the thoughts are being played on a TV screen or a movie screen. And you are standing back, sitting in the chair or the sofa or wherever you're sitting watching the movie. When you realize I'm in my chair, I'm in my lounge room, in my apartment or house, I'm here. It's only a movie on the screen. Then you remember, these are just thoughts. You put space between you and the thoughts, then it's very easy to let them go. They don't get entangled. So after a while, they don't last that long. They tend to just disappear because they're really stupid thoughts. You all know they're stupid thoughts. So if you wanted to stop your stupid thoughts, write them all down. All the stupid thoughts you have today, all the silly fantasies, write them down, and I'll read them out this evening. This is Susan's stupid thoughts for the day. You get so embarrassed, you stop doing it. But the thing is that we hide it as our secret world. But if you can put some space between you and you see just how stupid it is, it means you can let it go pretty easy. It's just thoughts, that's all. It's not important. But when you get entangled into it, when you get emotionally involved in your thoughts, that is where you get stuck. So if you have thoughts going on in this retreat, just push them in front of you and you're standing back watching them from a distance. You don't get really involved in them, but they're there. And after a while, they're not worth anything. So after a while, they just vanish by themselves. It's getting perspective, which is one part of mindfulness, seeing it from the right place, in the right perspective. So when that happens, you're mindful enough, you can see these things. And sometimes people say, oh, well, I didn't think these thoughts. These thoughts came by themselves. I often assumed that was the truth until my mindfulness became so strong I realize no thought comes by itself. You go out and pick one and drag it back in again. You go looking for thoughts to distract yourself. It's the same process that you're at home and you are bored. So you go and look in your refrigerator to see what you can eat. And there's things falling out of the refrigerator, but there's nothing to eat. So you turn on your TV with 64 channels and there's nothing to look at. And it's amazing. You surf the internet, nothing of interest on the internet. Have you ever noticed that when you're bored, nothing excites you or interests you? When I grew up, there was only two channels on the TV, black and white. And we still argued about which one we would watch. Now you've got 6,428. How many channels have you got these days on TVs? I lost count. Heaps of them. You don't know. Hundreds of channels. And you're still bored. So anyway, this is actually what happens. So we actually go looking for something to distract ourselves. So in order to stop that, my mindfulness saw, why is it I go out to try and distract myself? And it was because I was not content. Or the other thing was, I was afraid of peace. I was not used to the state of not thinking. It's strange, but most people have lived in a world of thoughts and plans and memories and dreams and fantasies, that when they are silent, they get a bit scared. It's exactly the same phenomena as a person who's been in prison for 30, 40 years, and they hear that tomorrow they will be released. They can go out, they can be free. But do they want to leave jail? They're afraid because they've got used to being in jail. And going outside is going into the unknown, and that's scary. So many of you have been in the prison of your thoughts. And the whole idea of leaving that and having some silence can be very scary. Which is why, as soon as we have a bit of peace, we go and drag a thought in pretty quickly. So, how can we solve that problem and get you to enjoy silence and get used to silence? It is not that difficult when you have many tricks as a meditation teacher. And this is one of the great tricks of meditation teachers. As I am doing this exercise, I also want you to be aware of your reaction inside your mind. Don't just be mindful of what I'm saying. Be mindful of what's going on inside your mind. Because as I am speaking, you will begin to notice there are many pauses between my words. In the spaces between my words, what was happening in your mind? There it was again. You were silent, aware, but not thinking. Now, there it is again. You have direct experience of what it's like to be silently aware. It's pretty cool, isn't it? The reason that works is because you didn't know when I was going to start speaking next. So you were waiting. And you didn't have a thought coming in because you didn't want to disturb what was going to happen next. You were silent. So those of you who have a lot of trouble stopping your thoughts, we can apply this by giving you a little training exercise. Now, in Hong Kong, most people are Mahayana Buddhists, and we always greet each other with Amitofu. That's how people greet one another. But in Indonesia, there's many Theravada Buddhists, and you greet one another with Namo Buddhaya. So you can use that greeting, Namo Buddhaya, as what we call a mantra, which is a group of words which you say to yourself over and over and over and over and over again. However, in order to develop being comfortable with silence, the way you do the Namo Buddhaya mantra is as follows. For maybe 1 minute, you chant to yourself, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya. You don't speak it, you say it, you think it, silently. And after 1 minute, then you put some spaces between the syllables. Namo Buddhaya, Namo. Just small spaces at first, maybe for another minute or two. And then you lengthen the spaces. Na, mo, bud, da. And gradually, but very slowly, you lengthen the spaces longer and longer and longer. Na, mo, good. And if a thought comes in, close the space down. Namo Buddhaya. So what that does, it pushes away all the thoughts because you have to focus on Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya. And then you put spaces between those syllables. Namo. And gradually extend those spaces. If you extend them too fast, a thought comes in, close them down again. Until you could have so much space between the na, mo, bud, where you're in silence. And when you're in that silence, after practice, you get so used to that silence, so comfortable, you don't need any na or mos or bud anymore. You're just silent. You've calmed down the thinking mind. And you've done it gradually, so it's not so scary. And you find that you are far healthier and far more alert. And you are far more sensitive to life. Especially in what you call real life, what I call fake life, when you go back home. In the fake world, Jakarta and Hong Kong, you have to work, you have to get relationships, you have to impress your boss, you have to perform. And one of the best ways of doing that is to learn how to listen silently. So when your boss is speaking, your mind is so silent, not a thought going on, which means you hear everything. When I tell this to students at schools, when you're listening to the lecturer, you make your mind perfectly still, not a thought going on, which means you absorb everything. Just like when you're cleaning in the kitchen. If you use a sponge which is already wet, it can't soak up very much. But if the sponge is dry, it can soak up so much more. If your mind is free of all thoughts, it can actually receive so much more information. And that's one of the tricks of monks. We don't use psychic powers when you talk to us. I make my mind perfectly still, no thoughts. So I pick up so much of what you say. It's there available for everybody. It's not psychic. All it is your perfectly silent, and you can pick up so much more. of life. So your clients' needs, the people you work for, the people who work for you, you can become far more sensitive when you listen in silence. And the same, you know, with your family. The same with your wife and husband. How many times do people say, "He doesn't listen to me. She just doesn't understand me." And it's so obvious to know why. He's trying to tell you something and you think, "Oh, here he goes again. How many times do I have to listen to this? I've heard this so many times before." Which means you're not listening. He does the same. This one guy came up to me, quite honestly, with sincerity. He said, "I've now been married for 3 years. I've finally been able to listen to my wife without hearing her." He was saying, so yeah, he listens, but it doesn't go in. It just in one ear, out the other. Totally nothing speaks. Now, that's not a good relationship. But if we're silent, we can actually really listen and we can understand not just what a person says, but what they mean. Just like that old story. It was the day before Valentine's Day. Do you have Valentine's Day in Indonesia? In Hong Kong? The day before Valentine's Day. And he said to his wife, "Darling, Valentine's Day tomorrow, what can I get for you?" And she said, "Oh, nothing, darling. Just having you as my husband is more than enough." That's what she said. But he knew how to listen. That's not what she meant. And he said, "No, I want to get you a present. What would you like? What would you really, really like?" So she looked at him and smiled and said, "Diamonds." Just anything, anything with diamonds in it. So you know what he did? The next day, she opened up her Valentine's Day present, and it was a pack of playing cards. It had 13 diamonds in it. That's a joke. But you can see that sometimes we just don't listen. Because, you know, we know the words. We don't know what's behind the words. So when you're silent, it's incredible how sensitive you can become and how much you can understand, which helps you in your ordinary life in the fake world. But it also really helps you in your meditation become much more sensitive, much more mindful of even your body. I read this in a book once. It was about from a doctor about some health issues. And this always really struck me. He said, "No one ever gets a heart attack just out of the blue. Your heart, if it gets sick, gives you many, many, many warnings before the big one comes. But so many people are so busy thinking about this and thinking about that, they don't recognize the warning until the big one comes and they can't ignore it." He said the body is like that. It does give you warnings that something's happening. And our trouble is, because we're thinking too much, we're not sensitive enough, so we don't heed the warnings. We don't act accordingly. I do become very sensitive to my body after so many years of meditation. And I can feel my body. If something's wrong, you can feel it. There's something wrong in there somewhere. You know, a lot of the times what I do, if I have the chance, I take a rest. And I've done this so many times, and it's just really weird. You know, you've just had a nice sleep in the morning, meditated, had your breakfast, and then think, "No, something's wrong, I need to go and take a rest." And if I do it properly, then I lay down. I've already slept enough last night. I lay down, and you go to sleep straight away. And you wake up half an hour later, you feel so good. I'm listening to my body. My body says, "Look, yeah, I know you've slept the normal amount, but there's something wrong in there. You know, I need you to sleep so I can fix it up," says the body. I've done that so many times, and it works so well. Very rare that I'm sick. If I'm sick, it's not really that long. Other monks in the monastery get sick. But, you know, if I do get sick, it's because I don't have the chance to actually to fix up my body, just too busy. But when I do, I listen to it. If my body says take a rest, okay, I'm going to take a rest. That means you are listening to your body rather than listening to the thoughts. You can feel it. And it's the same when you get into your meditation. This is another important teaching. If you go into really deep meditation, you can never think your way into deep meditation. You feel your way in there. Deep meditation is an emotional journey. A journey of high emotions of loving kindness, compassion. Peace is an emotion. You can feel what peace is. I'll prove that to you now. What is peace? So again, as I'm speaking, I want you to notice your reaction in your mind. Peace. 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 I can feel it now. All those words are signposts. They're pointing you towards what that word means. And I said that so many times. The first time I said the word peace, my mind wasn't really looking that far. Second time, it started looking. Third time, really started looking until it could feel it. Peace isn't a word, it's an emotion. The word is there to point you to what it means. Peace. Can you feel it? It's there. Now this is what meditation is. Peace, stillness, joy. These are emotional qualities which we're really developing when we meditate. That's what we're really aware of. Not just breathing in, breathing out. It's the quality of the breath, the peace, the stillness, the joy of it. That's what takes you off into incredible meditations. Trouble is we always like to put words onto things and we keep on mistaking the words for the thing. Not the last time I was in Dhammasara, the time before I went to teach at Dhammasara Monastery. And just to make a point, I said, I need to use the toilet. Where's the toilet? And it said, just over there, you can see the door over there. That's where the toilet is. And so I went to the door, and sure enough, there was a sign on it, toilet. So I said, oh, can I urinate on the door? Of course you can't urinate on the toilet. Well, it says toilet. It says this is the toilet, so I can urinate on the door. Would anyone do that? Only if they didn't realize. The word toilet on the outside of the door, that is not the toilet. The sign is not the toilet. The sign is pointing to the toilet. The toilet's inside the door. Imagine I went to Hong Kong Airport and I saw the toilet sign. I said, oh, the toilet sign. And I opened up my robe and just urinated on it. I'd get into big trouble. But then when it says toilet, so I'm just doing what I'm told. It says toilet, so I'm urinating on the sign. Because we all know the sign is pointing to where the toilet is. The word is pointing to what peace is. The word of stillness is just a word, but what does it actually mean? So when we stop thinking, then we can start feeling. We get to know our body, we get to know our emotions, and this is where we develop the really powerful emotions of peace. And peace becomes an incredible, wonderful journey. Because sometimes you get peace in your meditation. People say, what should I do next? Stop that doing something next. Just enjoy the peace and see it develop. Just stay with it. Because, as I mentioned before, stillness is not static. It's not boring. If you just stay with peace, you don't do anything, just peace. You're not doing anything. The peace grows and grows and grows. Peace becomes powerful. What you felt a few moments ago with peace, that's only scratching the surface. Peace is huge. like the other emotion, which, you know, love. Yeah, you know love, but sometimes love can get incredibly powerful. For those of you who do metta meditation, incredibly powerful. You just love everything and people can feel it. There's another nice old monk story. There was one of the monks of my generation a long time ago. We would go into the jungles, you know, to find solitude and also to find stories to give us in the talks when we get old monks and too old to go in the jungle anymore. You've got lots of nice jungle stories. And when you've got loving kindness, I'm just going off on the track now. When you've got loving kindness, you don't sort of have any fear and nothing can harm you. Just like, I'm going off on my own story before I do this other monk's story. We would meditate once a week, staying up all night. We wouldn't go to sleep. One night a week, we'd forgo sleep and meditate all night. So you can imagine, after 24 hours without sleep, 24 hours, 30 hours or something, without sleep, and you've been meditating all night, and when you get up in the morning, unless you've had a really powerful meditation, your mindfulness is a bit dull, you're sleepy, you just want to go to bed. But also, in the hall meditating all night, you need to go to the toilet. And this is in the jungle monasteries, so most of the monks, we don't go to the toilet, which is too far away. We go into the bush, into the forest, squat down, and urinate in the forest. Just natural. So, early in the morning, feeling a bit tired, having meditated all night, the first light of day, which wasn't that bright, I squatted down, Asian style. Remember the old Asian style? You squat down. It's important to know I was squatting down. And urinated in the forest. And I thought I was urinating on a stick. But then the stick started to move. And I realized that wasn't a stick, that was a snake. And a very venomous snake. And even worse, and honestly, ladies, only the men can really appreciate that this. The most sensitive part of my body was only a few inches away from that snake's mouth. Now that's very scary for a guy. And there I was, urinating, and I realized this was a snake looking at me, and I was urinating all over it. And what did that snake do? Did that snake bite me? Of course not. No, loving kindness, and also this was a Buddhist country in a Buddhist monastery. That snake was probably Buddhist, and obviously he thought he was being blessed with holy water. You can't get more holy than that, straight from a monk's bladder. So because of kindness, nothing would ever harm you. So this other monk, he was meditating. He arrived at a village. He'd always tell the villagers that you were there, so they'd prepare food for you the following morning. And also they said, oh, great, you're here. We're going to come in an hour's time or 2 hours' time after our dinner and you can give us a Dhamma talk. So this monk said, okay, come in about 2 hours' time. So he decided to meditate under a tree until the lay people came. And there he was meditating under a tree in a forest and doing anapanasati on the breath. And then he felt an ant crawl up his leg. One of the red biting ants. And then another. And then another. And he can feel all these ants climbing onto him because he sat too close to this big ant's nest. And they were biting him and biting him and biting him. Hundreds of ants biting him. But he was a tough monk. He was forest monk. He sat there. I'm not going to move. I'm going to endure this. And the next thing he knew, he was running away. Totally lost his mindfulness. And he was running away from being bitten by these hundreds of ants. And then he thought, no, that's not what a forest monk should do. So he turned around. And in the midst of this big swarm of ants, he very carefully, without squashing any ant, sat down and started meditating again, with all the ants crawling on him and biting him. But this time, instead of doing anapanasati, he did metta meditation. May all beings be happy and well. And after only a minute, because he was a good monk and been doing meditation a long time, the ants stopped biting him. The next thing he noticed, the ants started walking down his legs rather than up his legs, until the last ant left his body. And then he went into a very deep meditation. And when he came out of meditation, he was disturbed by all this noise. It was the lay people coming to listen to a talk. And as he opened his eyes, he saw all the lay people dancing. And he thought, this is a strange custom in this village, that they dance when they come to listen to a sermon from the monk. And then he realized why they were dancing. Because they were bitten by all these ants, and he looked around, and there was this huge swarm of ants, millions of ants, all covering the earth around him, with a 1 meter zone with not one ant in at all. The ants were protecting him, their friend. He said, weird, strange thing. 1 meter circle around him, not one ant at all. And after that, millions of ants all around him. The power of metta. So that's what happens if you've got loving kindness. You are immune. It's not the ants bite you, but they protect you. You are their friend, and they'll do anything for you. So those are great stories of what loving kindness does. But it has to be a strong emotion to be able to do that. If you try and think that, may all ants be happy and well. May all ants be happy and well. May all ants be happy and well somewhere else, not on me. Of course it doesn't work. It's thinking. When we get to the feeling, that is where it really takes off. And if the thinking stops us. So, we learn how to be silent. And in silence, you can see so much more. You can feel so much more. You can know so much more. All wisdom, which is useful, all comes from silence. So if you want to develop insight and understanding about the nature of the real world or the fake world, you need to shut up and listen to life instead of speaking back to her all the time. Shh, stop the thoughts and learn to be still. That was the Dhamma. Not all these words which I say, but what happened just a moment ago. That is the Dhamma. So when we learn how to be still, all this great wisdom arises, but there's still the peace grows and grows, it gets more and more intense, and that becomes the fun part of meditation. How peaceful can peace be? Sometimes in meditation you get to the most peaceful state you could ever think existed, and then you go to the next stage, which is infinitely more peaceful than peace. And you think, this is the end. It can't be anything more peaceful than this. And then you get to another stage which is infinitely more peaceful than infinite peace. It keeps on going on like that. It's really good fun. Really recommended to see how peaceful peace could be. And you get great insights. Great fun. Great for your health. And great for your understanding of freedom. Freedom from thought. The thinking drives you crazy sometimes. Sometimes people can't stop thinking, and they can't even sleep at night. They can't even enjoy their food. They're thinking all day. And your poor brain. No wonder your brain sort of packs up and gets tumors or gets all sorts of rotten stuff, because you're misusing it. So learn how to be still and peaceful. And if the Namo Buddhaya doesn't work, The other way is actually to go out into nature. Because if you're listening to nature, you can't be thinking. Listen to the birds, listen to the sound of the traffic in the distance. If the wind is blowing, listen to the wind through the trees. The rain is falling and you can hear the rain come through the gutters and through the downpipe. You can hear it just trickling. Listen to that. That's why traditionally in Buddhism we've always listened to nature and become very sensitive to her. Especially the sounds of nature, the changes of the day. When we're not thinking, we can actually enjoy nature. And this place is a very, very beautiful place, this Jhana Grove Retreat Center. Just the views here are exquisite. If ever you see an aerial photograph, we're on this little island surrounded by forests. And we've got these beautiful views over to the ocean in the distance. This has got perfect feng shui. It has. You ask any expert, it's just the right place. So we're really fortunate here. And because of that, it should be pretty easy just to enjoy the place. And again, we've had a lot of cloud cover, but the stars at night, if ever you have a clear day, we should have a clear day in the next couple of days, a clear night. Maybe it's a little bit cold, but you can get a blanket and lie on your back on the stupas, on the stone there. Lie on the back and just enjoy an incredible sky in Australia. You don't see that in Hong Kong or anywhere in Indonesia. But here in Australia, you can see just the Milky Way and thousands of stars. And you're just on your back just watching that. You soon get incredibly peaceful and still. And it's getting you connected to the world beyond your thoughts, which is what meditation does. And when you start to become used to silence, to peace, and it's so easy when you're time to meditate, I'm just going to go to that silence and peace. Because the mind recognizes and values that silence so much, it's been there many times, it's an old friend, as soon as the silence comes up, well, you hang out with it for long periods of time. Just being silent. And people say, what do I do next? That's another thought which has disturbed the silence. Shh. Calm down, thinking. You can imagine there's no thoughts inside the mind, which means all of the language which makes you disturbed is all stopped. When there's no thinking, there's nothing to do. You can't do anything. You just get more and more and more peaceful. And if you wonder what should happen, whatever happens, happens. Go along for the ride. Amazing things happen in meditation. Strange experiences, wonderful experiences. It doesn't matter what happens. You are perfectly safe. And also, you're with a teacher who knows all about these things, so you know, you're with an expert. So when it gets to those deep meditations, I know what I'm talking about, so you are perfectly safe and you can get the very best advice. Which means you feel very safe, just don't interrupt the process, just see where it leads. Because sometimes in those stages of meditation, when it gets through, very peaceful and very still, sometimes people have some strange visions. It can be weird stuff. It can be interesting stuff. It can even be scary stuff, but it's not scary at all. Just enjoy it. If anybody does get scary visions, I'm now going to tell you this time when I got a really scary vision. I got very peaceful. The thought subsided. And then right in front of my mental vision was this monster, this demon. His tongue was right out. His eyes were bulging and red. And all the hair was like a punk, like all so sticky. And a garland of skulls around. Right in front of me when I was meditating. Was I scared? I'm not a namby-pamby cream puff. I can handle any monster. Right in front of me. So what did I do to this monster? you know this is a mental image. You're not seeing it with your eyes, you're seeing it with your mind. And mental images you can play around with. So immediately I imagine this monster with sunglasses on. So I couldn't see his big bulging red eyes. And as soon as I imagined that, he had sunglasses on. So it's a very cool monster, like an Elvis Presley monster. His teeth, all sharp and dripping blood. So I imagine a few teeth missing, like it needed to go to see the dentist. And I put a little cigarette in the end of its mouth. So it was like a badly behaved monster. And I put the straw hat on its head with a little flower coming out. You know, I've seen people like straw hats and flowers, mostly for girls, but I put this one on, this monster. And this monster, when I finished with it, looked so ridiculous. In my meditation, I laughed. It's really funny. And then monster never came back again. That's how you treat monsters. Humiliate them. And I really enjoyed that. I had this other, I'm going into some stuff now. This other, where in this meditation, I was having a psychic battle. Just in meditation, okay? With this Hindu yogi, flying through the air, zapping each other, zapping this way and zapping that way. It was just my mind was playing around, but it was really good fun. I really enjoyed that one. And in the end, I won, of course, because, you know, it's my mind. And then after I'd finished with all that, then you get very, very peaceful and still. All it is your mind just wanting to have a bit of play. And I let my mind do that. So I just let it, okay, it's just what you want to do, do it. And it plays around, have this great psychic battle, having wonderful times. And afterwards, okay, played around now. Now be calm and peaceful. So if you have any of those visions and stuff like that, enjoy them. Meditation can be quite boring sometimes when nothing happens. And you have a bit of like razzmatazz happens inside your mind, monsters and angels and visions and stuff. Wow, this is really cool. And then after it disappears, now you can go back to work again. Because all it is your mind being free. I call that you so control what you're allowed to see and what you're not allowed to see. Your perception is just so controlled. What's happening here is you're letting go of all these restrictions on the way you're allowed to see things. All your perception, that has been trained since you were a child. At school, you know, you see a picture. That's a man, that's a girl, that's a house, that's mummy, that's daddy. And we can't see things in other ways. That's our problem. So when you get to this stage of the meditation, all of that training is put aside. And you start to see things in ways which should not exist. I remember once watching a war, and the wall started to melt. Just all the hard clay started to become like chocolate on a hot day, all melting. That was really cool. You weren't going crazy. It wasn't drugs. It was just your perception was becoming free. It was a wall again afterwards. You're not afraid. Sometimes in meditation, you feel you're not levitating, but you're meditating here. Sometimes you feel you're floating up and floating up. You're on the ground. It's just your perception playing around. Sometimes it's really, really common. In meditation, sometimes you think your body is expanding, expanding, expanding. People actually feel that way. It's not expanding. It's just perception. It's just playing around. That happened to me once. My body was expanding and expanding and expanding. And I made a mistake. I opened my eyes. And that's how it got stuck like this. I've got hundreds of excuses. But these are just what happens to me. If that happens to you, you are perfectly safe. Do not be worried. Do not be afraid. It's good fun. And what it is, you're letting go. That's what's supposed to happen. And just have weird things happening. You're totally safe. No one ever goes crazy. And that was only a joke. This is not because I opened my eyes when my body was expanding. It was already big before I started meditating. But that's what it feels like. So those things happen, just let it happen, enjoy. Because afterwards, when the body really starts to get still, That's when the beautiful visions happen. That's when you start to see these beautiful lights in the mind called the nimittas. And when those happen, you're really getting into some nice meditation. But that'll be the subject of tomorrow's talks, the nimittas and beyond. Today's talk is about the power of silence. So try, please, try not to talk to each other, if you possibly can. If you really need to, okay. And don't feel guilty if you do start talking. Because we don't have guilt. You're just trying to do your best. You will fail many times. Try and do better next time, that's all. But if you can have more silence on this retreat, today and the next days, you'll find the meditation gets deeper. And you can talk to each other on Friday afternoon when you go visiting Dharamsala. It's only for a couple of days. To see what it's like to be silent. If you need to say something, say it. But mostly you don't need to say anything at all. And be more aware. Try not to have so much thinking. If you really have so much thinking, try Namo Buddhaya, putting space between the words. Until you get used to the silence. Go and listen to the sound of the birds or the rain or the wind or whatever's happening. Start to feel instead of think. And then the meditation gets stronger and stronger. So that is the instructions for today. Sadhu. 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 Very good. Okay, have a wonderful day. This is Ajahn Brahm, now being silent.